couple of years, we've been hearing lots of stories about how self-driving cars are right around the corner. In fact, the CEO of Nissan says automated cars will be on the road by 2020. And his company and many other car companies have invested a lot of money in that future technology. GM in January invested $500 million in Lyft, with a focus on developing networks of autonomous vehicles. Ford is making over its Michigan headquarters into a Silicon Valley-like campus of buildings connected by self-driving shuttles. Toyota has formed a partnership with and invested an undisclosed amount in Uber, the other big ride-hailing company. Volkswagen has made a deal with a very popular app in Europe that does pretty much the same thing. Apple is working on its own self-driving autos and invested $1 billion in a Chinese ride-hailing company that competes fiercely with Uber. And, of course, you know that Google has been working on self-driving cars for nearly a decade now. Well, my next guest says that all of that is problematic. His name is Stephen Schladover, who is the head of the Partners for Advanced Transportation Technology at the University of California at Berkeley. He wrote a piece about this in Scientific American this week that caught my eye. It's called The Truth About Self-Driving Cars. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What is so problematic about self-driving technology?
Well, there are many different types of automation that can be applied to vehicles, and the general coverage has blurred the distinctions among those different levels of automation, so that people have come to expect much more than what's really going to be happening. You know, for example, if you go through any major hub airport these days, you can ride a people mover that'll take you from one terminal to another with no driver on board. Those have been in operation for 40 years already without any driver in the vehicle, but they operate in a very protected environment. They're on a closed track where nothing else can get in the way.
Yep.
So that's a manageable complexity problem. Once you try to put vehicles out in general road traffic where they have to interact with the pedestrians, the bicyclists, the animals, and all the bad behaviors of all the other drivers on the road, things get a whole lot more complicated.
So is that unpredictability of what's out there on the road, or maybe even severe weather like we're having here today in St. Louis, that causes a problem for the software?
All of those things cause problems for the software, and the software is of tremendous complexity, so that it's very difficult to show that that software will behave correctly under all the conditions that it's going to encounter when it's out on the road. This is why the systems that are coming on the market now and will be coming on the market in the next few years only operate under very limited conditions, and they operate under the supervision of the driver. So, for example, a lot of cars today have adaptive cruise control, which will maintain a proper distance behind the car in front of you. That's a form of automation, and that can be done today, and it's been on the market for a decade already, because that's a case in which the driver is still doing the steering. The driver is still looking out in front, trying to detect any obstacles in the road or anybody cutting in front abruptly or any of the other things that might be too complicated for the software to handle. But the software is very good at just doing the vehicle following and maintaining a proper separation behind another vehicle.
Is this simply a task that humans are better than computers at?
Humans are better than computers at recognizing complex situations, and driving is a really complex situation,
mm-hmm.
particularly when you get into urban areas. Freeway driving is not as complicated. So, for example, higher levels of automation will probably become available for freeway driving only before they become available for driving under all urban conditions. And there are people working on some low-speed urban shuttle vehicles that can drive within a limited environment For example, they might drive on the sidewalks rather than in the streets, or they might drive on a lane that's been separated for their use within the public streets, so they're segregated from the rest of the traffic. And that way, the environment in which they operate is not as complex as the general urban driving environment.
But I've seen video of what Google's been doing, and they have taken their car out into the area around Mountain View, California, and put it on the city streets there and had it drive around. And the cars seem to be performing pretty well.
Well, but those cars are being driven with one or two people supervising them every second that they're out on the road. So those vehicles are not handling everything. When they get into any kind of a situation that the software can't handle, that test driver takes over immediately to avoid a crash. So the reason that they don't have very many crashes is they've got test drivers taking over to ensure safety, which is as it should be. And by the way, I live about a half mile from their site, so I see their test vehicles out on the road all the time. So that's kind of a common sight in my neighborhood.
It must also be a little odd sight the first time you see one of those. And what I love about the Google auto stories is that the only accidents that those cars have been involved in have been rear endings by human beings who didn't realize that that car was stopping when it was supposed to.
Yeah, well, those cars drive very, very cautiously. Think of it driving like your grandmother when she's not quite sure what's going on. So if you come up to a stop sign behind one of those vehicles, it'll stop and it'll wait there for several seconds before it then picks up and proceeds through the intersection.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got somebody impatient behind it, they may expect it to go a little bit faster. And by the way, when you see them out on the road, you can't really tell from the outside, is the driver driving or is the system driving? It's very hard to tell what's going on just by observing it from outside.
I love computer technology. I was working with a computer in my high school 40 years ago, you know, the kind of computer that took up an entire room and was in the only air-conditioned room in the entire building. That's how long I've been using computers of one kind or another, and I love the fact that I'm now walking around with a computer in my pocket that's more powerful than all the computers in the mission control when we went to the moon. But I also know that computers sometimes don't do the job correctly. Anybody who's ever asked Siri a certain command knows that it doesn't actually understand everything you're supposed to do. And I wonder how much of a problem that is when we come to the life and death battle on the roads.
That is absolutely a problem. You've put your finger on one of the key issues. And another one, keep in mind, if you use a computer, you may occasionally get the little hourglass symbol or a spinning blue donut that says it's not quite ready to give you an answer.
Yeah.
Well, if that computer was driving your car, you crashed, because that computer has to be able to make its decisions within about a tenth of a second when you're driving at highway speed. If it fails to make such a decision within about a tenth of a second, you've probably gotten into a very dangerous situation. And the other thing we have to keep in mind is when we look at the traffic safety statistics for today, just normal people driving, the mean time between serious crashes is remarkably long. So if I look at the traffic safety statistics, fatal crashes occur about once in 3.3 million hours of driving. Hours, not miles. And injury crashes are about once in 65,000 hours of driving. So to put that into, those are big numbers, but to put it into terms that are easier to understand, the 3.3 million hours would be 375 years of 24/7 continuous driving.
Wow.
And the 65,000 hours is over 7 years of 24/7 continuous nonstop driving.
And that's with humans behind the wheel.
That's right. That's with humans behind the wheel. So you don't want to have an automated system that's going to be any worse than that. It's got to be at least as good as that.
At least.
And yeah, well, some people say maybe it's got to be twice as good or 10 times as good. But just getting to equally good to what we have with today's traffic safety will be a huge accomplishment. accomplishment. Because think of the computer that's going to run 375 years, 24/7, without a glitch.
Yeah, I can't imagine one.
Right. Well, and that's why this is so hard.
Interesting study came out this week from the University of Michigan that says only about 15% of drivers actually want a fully autonomous vehicle. Most of us like driving and want to be behind the wheel. But we also could imagine that time when you're out somewhere and you're tired, or you've had a couple of drinks and you just want to get home, and you want to be able to get in the car, tell it where to go, close your eyes, and the next thing you know, you've arrived at your destination. From what I'm hearing from you here today, Steve, that's not happening anytime soon.
That's right. That is decades away. That's not happening for a very long time.
And, you know, the other part of this is that with Uber and Lyft involved, you know, they would love to get to the point where you use your app to call a robotic car with a robotic driver to come and pick you up, so you don't even have to own a car. That sounds like it's even further out.
Well, that might be possible if you confined it to some very limited scale area. Let's say you had a gated retirement community where there's very limited traffic within the streets. Maybe you could do it within an enclosed environment like that. But to do it, to take you from any origin to any destination, that's going to be a whole lot harder.
But there are a lot of steps between where we are now and fully autonomous robotic cars. So what do you think we can expect in the next, let's just say, 5 years?
Well, in the next 5 years, I think we will have some freeway driving systems that will allow you to temporarily turn the driving over to the car while it's on a freeway that's well marked, you know, has well maintained lane markings, and the weather is fine, and the traffic is not moving too irregularly. You could then pull out a book and read a book, or you know, do your web surfing or whatever else. There probably will be some systems like that, and there will be some low-speed shuttle systems operating in urban areas, again, probably somewhat segregated from the rest of the traffic so that the safety can be maintained, and maybe only at very low speeds. And I expect there'll be some systems for trucks that will allow the trucks to follow each other at close separations on the highway. The drivers will still be doing the steering, but the control systems will allow them to follow each other really closely so that you'll get some benefits of drag reduction and save fuel. And there'll probably be some systems for buses that will help buses operating in segregated bus lanes to be able to steer automatically and pull up to the curb so that passengers can get on and off without having to step up and down, but it can line up directly with the platform, kind of like a rail transit system, but using buses. Those are all things that I think are reasonable to expect within the next 5 years.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's not the flying car that I want, and it's not the robot car that a lot of other people want, but any advances in technology that work and either save lives or save time and energy are good things going forward, and I'm looking forward to seeing what both Detroit and Silicon Valley, and I guess Tokyo and Munich as well, can come up with in those realms. Steve, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Steven Schlatover is the head of the Partners for Advanced Transportation Technology at the University of California at Berkeley, and author of a terrific piece in this week's Scientific American called The Truth About Self-Driving Cars. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.